This is CWA Conference on World Affairs session 4105, entitled The Power Behind #MeToo. What did we learn? Or I should rephrase that, what are we learning and what do we do now? I'm Ginny Corsi. I'm a business consultant. I'm not a therapist, therefore this will not be a therapy session. But we will have some fun. I do executive team building. I work with people, executives who have not learned to accept difference without judgment. So my reason for being here, leading this all, is the color of my hair, for one thing. And I have been around. I have experienced much of what you all have experienced, I'm thinking, which is why you're here. But I want you to know, importantly, that I will be a facilitator, not a moderator. In fact, some of my friends call me a facipulator. And it's true. I am a facilitator and a manipulator, and you will see it in action today. And you'll know what I mean shortly. This is going to be different because we are part of a movement. And in women's movements, one of the major goals is, though we never knew it, is simply we are not alone. I'm looking around at all of you, and I see this wonderful, diverse audience of men. Welcome, men. You're going to be involved, too, because we cannot do this. No matter how we talk about this movement, we cannot do this without you. We cannot do this without you and your boys. If this tsunami continues toward equality and respect for women, then we really need you men involved. So I hope you all will stay. If any of you walk out, I'll just assume it's because you have to go to the men's room, okay? I won't take it personally. We have some terrific resource people in the room this time for this kind of thing, because I'm going to get you all involved, and you're going to have to be talking about things that have happened to you, not in any depth. Again, I am not a therapist, but enough to begin a discussion so that we know we are not alone. When I begin this discussion, there may be some of you who would say afterward, I wish that I could talk about this. There's no one I can talk to about this. And we have in our presence, I'm going to ask them to stand, and I would love you to applaud for them after I introduce you to them all. We have Jessica Ladd-Wiebert here of CU Boulder's Office of Victim Assistance. Jessica, there you are back there. Ask you to hold it, because I know you love and respect them all. From MESA, a wonderful community organization. If you don't give to MESA, I don't know why you don't. MESA stands for the Movement to End Sexual Assault. And from MESA, we have Martha Hawkinson. Martha, there you are. From the CU Office of Institutional Equity and Compliance, we have Julia Vokens, who heads up prevention education. These three women will have materials out back for you. They're there. Find them. They'll be lingering afterward. Find them if any of you are stimulated by more discussion about this topic. Please. I could tell you about questions and all of, and the drill about the students go first. You all know that. You've heard that. Because this is going to be a different format, I'm going to ask you to hold any questions you might have. You can send them electronically on your app, and we do have cards by our producers to pass these out. But I think we'll hold those questions till the end. Let me introduce this other, the world's longest panel, which is great because we've asked people and invited people who are speakers at the conference to come and be a part of this. And I've said to them, look, I don't want to read your bio. I don't like it when you can all read the bios. These are very impressive women we have up here. What I'm going to ask them to do in 15 seconds or less is to introduce themselves loudly into the microphones and tell why you wanted to be on this panel today. And I'm going to start here with Maggie. Maggie? Tell us why you're here.
My name is Maggie Duncan Simbeye. Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I am tired of being discriminations. There's a lot of that, and domestic violence is in my country, Tanzania. Thank you. That's why I'm here.
Great. Ellen?
My name is Ellen Sweets.
Louder, Ellen, please.
My name is Ellen Sweets, and I'm a retired reporter. I'm here because my first job in England, as I was standing at my boss's desk reviewing some copy that I had written, I felt his hand sliding up my leg, and when I whacked it away, I got fired.
Well, that's a pretty specific example of why you're here. Good, Ellen. And Surreal, our musical star.
Hi, I'm Surreal. And I work in a very male-dominated, at times machist world, which is the world of jazz. And I do think, though, that this is not a battle that should be led just by women against men. I think this is a battle that we all have to lead against the generations of things we have been taught about what it means to be a boy or a girl, and to fight for the future generation so they can be liberated from this role they think they have to play.
And Eva, our architect.
Hi, I'm not an architect. Don't ask me anything about your kitchen, please. I am here because last night when I had my tag on, I was at a party and a man came up to me and he said, "Excuse me, where are the wine glasses?" And I looked at him and I said, "I don't know." And he said, "I'm sorry, I assumed you were a staff." And because of my experiences, I said to him, "Don't assume that every young woman that you see is staff. I'm here because I'm tired of smiling when Lyft drivers explain my own field to me. And I am tired of letting anyone just touch me because they think that my body is just like available to them because they feel like it. So I'm here because I'm fucking over it. And I have now practiced looking at people and being like, you actually can't do that."
Yes, Charlie? Pull that microphone right up there, Charlie.
That was amazing. Hi, thank you for having me. I'm really honored to be here. I have to be honest with you. I don't know why I was asked to be here, particularly. I will tell you that when I was told I was going to be on the panel, I was like, wow, me? Oh, okay. And I come from a family of matriarchs, meaning that there were all women in my family, one man. And I watched growing up as a child, I watched all of the women in my family be beaten, sexually harassed. I've also experienced some of that. And so I was raised with a very particular way of looking at the world, and that's that women had to fight to survive, to be heard, to whisper, to think, to yell, to everything. And so as an adult, I've taken that on. And I don't think little girls should have to take that on. So taking that on as a woman and going into the entertainment field and financial and, you know, banking and law firms, I've had a lot of those experiences. I sat in the back of my Uber car today, this morning, and I said, why am I here? And that was the question that I asked. And as strong as I think that I am and as powerful as I think that I've been able to be with the support of other people in my life, like amazing women and men who've helped me to find my voice, I realize that if I'm asking myself that question now still, that means that there's still a part of my experience and my voice that I'm not owning. And so I'm here hoping that you help me to find that as well as I can help you to find yours.
Thank you, Charlie. And we know why you're here, Charlie, in case you didn't. Yes, Lisa.
Yes, I'm here because...
Can we hear you?
Can you hear me?
Louder.
You got to be able to hear me today. I'm here because I've worked in male-dominated environments in corporate America my entire career. Extreme frustration with what's been allowed, what the system has allowed, and working in a situation that has been male-dominated at the power levels, and how the whole environment of go along to get along. And so I have been trying to disrupt this system throughout my entire career. Here's the reality. I can't do it alone. So I can't be the only one speaking up. I need those in the room that see it. If you see something, say something. We have got to stop saying it's their problem. We all need to be a part of it. And if you're not a part of solving the problem, you're being attached to that problem. The company that you're at that allows that, the teams that you work with that allows that, becomes a part of your reputation and history. And you have to explain, why was I on Joe Paterno, Penn State's football coaching staff, and I didn't say anything about the horrible things that were happening there? You own it if you don't say something. So in time, maybe it's not today, but it will be in time that you're going to own what you ignore. So thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Christina.
Yes, I'm here. I work for the largest Muslim faith-inspired NGO in the world. We work in about 60 countries across the globe. And clearly, in a lot of those developing countries, we see a lot of things that we would like to change. We took a courageous step at the UN Women's Conference just a couple of weeks back to hold a North American consultation, and it's just the first of many across the globe, to launch an Islamic Declaration on Gender Justice, where we're going to reaffirm our texts. And we also are working with a lot of other faith communities, Jewish and Christian and others, to look at texts and reinterpret them and make sure we're living and abiding by those principles and values.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. I hope you're not going to be sorry you're here. Let me tell you what we're going to do. Let me set the scene for you. 45 years ago, I was part of what would come to be known as the women's movement. Some of you may remember some of the names that I got to know, from Gloria Steinem to Betty Friedan to Shirley Chisholm to Bella Abzug. We got together out of a sense of outrage in the 70s. It was an outrage that we were not participants in democracy. We weren't in governments. We didn't have high-paying jobs. We lost opportunities. They kept us out. We weren't satisfied just being mothers in the home. Though we loved that, we loved being wives and mothers, we knew there was something more. So we started a movement. And we thought that if we could pass the Equal Rights Amendment nationally, and some states did, that everything would be okay. And of course, it never passed nationally. And now, where are we all these years later? We know the stories on pay equity. On pay equity, we just celebrated how many days it takes for women to make the same amount of money that a man makes. We're not where we ought to be, or we thought we would be. We know that not only managers and CEOs, those ranks don't have us there in numbers, not for the numbers of our population. We don't share the boardroom seats the way the men do. So what happened, and what's different? Today, this is a new movement. And it's a movement that they're talking about not as a movement. They're saying words like tsunami and watershed and transformation. In my era of the women's movement, we were touched at a deep level. We came together, we began to understand that word, that phrase, we're not alone. Today, with this Me Too movement, it's different. It's brought us together by a very powerful force that's a much deeper emotional and experiential level, and that is sexual harassment and assault. We didn't start this all. It started because a wonderful woman in Tarana Burke 10 years ago started this phrase, Me Too, to raise consciousness for women, young black women, who were being sexually assaulted. The traction came here these many 10 years later when white privileged women in Hollywood began to speak out. And when they began to speak out, they used that term, Me Too. And that Me Too resonated with thousands, millions of women. We all, so many of us, so many of my friends, we all said Me Too. And Me Too turned into Me Too, time's up, enough, and never again. So what's different about this movement? It's that level of connection. And you're all here for some reason or another, and I'm going to make you answer the same question that I just asked all of them, which is, why are you here? I think it's very important, and I'm turning this into an experience that I don't think has happened at CWA, but if we created this women's track, and a wonderful group of women created these workshops, if we create this, and we say this is leadership in the words of women, that we really want to hear the words of women and the men who are here today too. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to use my facilitation and manipulation skills, and I'm going to make you do some interesting things. The first thing I want you to do, because we're all experts, they're experts from their fields, but they're just people having had an experience. Many of us have had experiences. Here's what I want you to do. You're going to meet some new people. First of all, this is going to be a very short opener. First of all, I want you to, everybody to stand up. If it's hard for you to stand up, you can stay seated. And then, because we're women, we never sit in rows. We like to move around, and we like to turn and face each other and all that. So I'm going to ask you to just start walking around and find somebody you who have no idea who that is, male or female. You got to find a new friend. You don't have to be close friends. Give them your first name. Make up your first name. I don't care. But go find someone that is not like you. And I want you to do that right now, and then I'm going to look to see who needs a partner.
I saw you last night, but we never knew it was such a moxie.
Yeah, it was a nice party.
All right. All right. Here's your first assignment. Does anybody need a partner? Anybody need anybody? No, you found somebody good. Here's the first question I want you to ask. Somebody has to be A and somebody has to be B. Select right now. Who's going to be A and who's going to be B? Got that? Okay. Here's your first question. 2 minutes, and I'm going to time you and you'll hear my alarm go off. 2 minutes. A tells B, I'm here today because, and it can range from, I had an experience that I never forgot. It was a little bit like that, 2 minutes. I'm only giving you 2 minutes to describe it, basically. Or you could say, I'm here because I'm curious. I just wondered what they were going to talk about, and I came here to hear the panelists, and oh, my God, this is not what I wanted to happen. But, and if you just came to hear the panelists, which you will hear more of them, you know, then if you're not comfortable, it's okay with me. I'm not going to take it personally. But it wouldn't, I think you might find it interesting to talk to somebody different from you and say, well, here's why I chose this workshop, this session. And then I'm going to switch you after 2 minutes, and B's going to tell A, here's why. I tell you, you can do anything that's safe for you. You can go as deeply as you want to. You can make it as objective as you want to. You could say, something happened to my daughter. Something happened to my wife, to my grandmother, and I never forgot it. Anywhere on that range is all yours, okay? 2 minutes, A tells B, start.
Yeah.
That's it. Time's up. Time's up. Shh. How do you like that ring? That's pretty cool, huh? Now, speaker B tells listener A why you're here. 2 minutes. Start. Okay, time's up. Shh. Time's up. 2 minutes. 2 minutes done. You can sit down wherever you are. You don't have to find your way back, or you can. Try to remember where your new friend is. Now I'm going to ask the panel.
What?
I'm going to ask which one of you? I'm going to ask three of you to choose to speak on what you said to your partners on the panel. Which three of you would like to address this first question?
Go ahead.
Oh, you're going to make me force you to talk, are you?
Okay, I Eva, always go ahead. First. Yeah, so I'll
Loud
go first.
Loud and clearly, please.
What?
Loud and clear in the microphone.
Okay. Can you hear me? Is this microphone working? Yes? Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah, so I'm like an American 35-year-old woman. I've experienced rape. I've experienced sexual assault. I've experienced sexual harassment. It took me until this year to be like, oh, I have experienced all those things. Because I just thought that that was like a condition of being a person, of being a woman. I was like, oh, yeah. I made this joke with a friend of mine that I was glad that I came of age before consent. That's a fucked up joke to make. But in a way, I feel sort of like I just, yeah, I came of age before I understood what consent was. I'm here because I got sort of radicalized by being harassed at UC Berkeley, and I filed a complaint, and I hired lawyers, and I filed a potential civil claim. And I just used the law, and I used the media, and I realized that the law and the media are very powerful, and they're actually not that scary to use. Lawyers are very good at being lawyers, so hire lawyers. Okay, thanks.
Ellen, for age diversity, would you talk about why, elaborate on what you said and why, how you answered this question?
Good.
Give me the question again.
The question was, why are you here? What happened is really what it was.
Yeah, as I said, I lost my job. And I realized that speaking out has consequences, but I think that we can't be afraid to speak out because it has consequences. I come from probably a longer tradition of civil rights activism than most of the people on the panel. I'm 77, and I've come through a tradition where you made choices, you took risks, you took chances, and sometimes there were consequences. There shouldn't be consequences. And one of the reasons I'm excited about this movement is that it is galvanizing women and men, I hope, to understand why it's important that we respect one another. And it's as elementary as that. It's about respect. And there's also a part of me, excuse me, that is concerned for men, because I think men in this whole movement are confused. I think they don't know what to do or say anymore without having allegations of harassment levied at them. And let me tell you very quickly, years ago when I was working in corporate America, had gone over to the dark side, I worked with a couple of women. There were very few of us in our department. And I worked with a woman who was always very, very well-dressed. And one of the guys saw her coming down the hall one day and said, "Mary, you are really looking sharp today." She filed a harassment complaint against him and asked several of us to back her up. And I said, "I can't," because that was a compliment. He didn't touch you. He didn't put his hand on your hip and say, "You're looking fine today in that tight skirt." He said, "You're looking really good today." And I think that we need to be careful that we don't trivialize legitimate complaints, that we don't confuse them with really basic expressions of appreciation. So I'm here because, not so much because I want to defend men against allegations of harassment, but because I want us to be aware of the weight these complaints carry.
Good point, Ellen. We'll talk about that. Cyril, you want to answer this too? Okay, go ahead.
I have both what you guys said resonated with me because first what you said that you just this year realized that all these things that happened to you were actually not supposed to and were not cool and not consent. I think the same happens with the men, and I've realized that a lot of these men who have done these things haven't realized until now that they were not supposed to do it. They thought that it, you know, acting this way makes you a man, you know, and that's how you're supposed to act, you know, because you're a man. And I think it's the same realization that we're both having, that being a woman doesn't mean that you have to accept this, and being a man doesn't mean that you have to act like this. And just like you said, the men are also learning a lot through this process, and that's why when I first introduced myself, I said that we have to see this battle as a battle of all of us, male and female, for the future generations. And one thing that bothers me about this panel is that there's only women, because it's not a fight of angry women getting back at men. You know, the men are also learning a lot through this us speaking out, and it's for future generations.
Thank you. One more comment? Okay.
Yeah, and I'll speak from the dark side, corporate America. So I'm hoping more people will get into the dark side so it becomes more light. But anyway, what I would say is my experience is I didn't really have the experiences or hear about those where they were more trivial. I will say that my experience was more of kind of a combination of someone who just didn't know It was the environment they're around and made comments and didn't realize those were inappropriate or offensive. Didn't care. And some really just wanted to harass you out because they don't want you to change that environment. It's kind of been a good old boys club in whatever situation it was, and you are starting to disrupt it. And I know that because my sister, 26 years at LAPD, was very disruptive when she went on the force in 1986. Mm. So you either go along, get along, and take some to be here, because this is the way we are. And I think what we need to recognize is, by the way, men are being harassed as well as women, and they're probably the last one to bring it up because they're going to be harassed even more. So I think there's a lot of folks out there that I know personally that have been very offended and harassed. And I think we've got to realize it's a movement for all of us to recognize you should be able to go to work and be respected and treated professionally. So the thing we all have to do is tune in, pay attention, and disrupt the system that it's allowed this to occur. And that's really what the founder, Tarana Burke, had said. We have to disrupt the system. Just like we talk about disruptive technology, we need to disrupt the system that it's allowed this. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So the question that comes next is, so what? So something happened to you, if that's what you were talking about, or something happened to someone that you care about. What was the impact of that experience on your life, on your career, on your family? And that's what I want you to share with each other again. I want you to stand back up, find... That was it, huh?
Okay.
You know, I'm very flexible. But it really is the question you have to ask. You could just turn to someone next to you and say, you know, that happened. You aren't used to interactive. That's okay with me. Yes, let's ask the panel. What is...
Thank you for speaking up.
We're women. We listen. We're dynamic, right? Yeah,
I would like.
Yes. Okay. I came to hear you, and the students wanted to have a discussion. I do have to tell you, the students asked that this be more of a discussion group so people could talk to each other. But I appreciate what you're saying.
I appreciate that.
The panelists. What happened as a result of that? How? Because that's the real issue, isn't it? Did it impact us when something happened long ago? And let's hear from each of you on the impact of what an experience you remember that changed the way you looked at life or not. Could you talk about that? Who wants to start?
When my mom delivered a second born, actually, her mom came to visit her from very far village. Hours and hours. And that was after 2 weeks from when she delivered. And those days, my dad only was earning income, and so he has a voice. And my mom didn't have any voice. And so even if it's a certain misunderstanding between them, always my mom will say sorry, because if she doesn't say sorry, she'll never get food for the children and for herself. So that day, my grandmom came, and she said hello, and my mom was escorting her outside, distance, like from here to the main door. And my daddy, I don't know how he came from the work. It's not normal time, but he appeared, and he found my mom escorting her mom. And he beat her to the max, mom, and he raped her. Imagine that was after 2 weeks after delivering. So she was still vulnerable. And he really raped her, and he did everything he could. And my mom, they had to take her to hospital, and etc. Then my mom went back home to her parents, and my grandfather said, no, because you're already married, you have to respect your husband. Go back to your husband. And my grandmom said, no, I saw her husband was really beating her. But my grandmom then had to hide my mom somewhere with a little baby outside in the cow's house and cold and all these embarrassments for some days. And then my dad came to say sorry. So my grandmom taught my mom one thing. She said, before saying, okay, I've forgiven you, because you have to go back to your husband. There's no way. That's how they treat us. Make sure, tell your husband to put a pipe for the water in the garden and make the garden, plant the vegetables. And then women from different places will come to buy vegetables. And you will be connecting with many women and also you'll earn income. And from there, you'll have voice. And my mom did that. Although my dad was taking money and was treating her harsh, but then at the end of the day, when my dad started to see the impact, the positive impact at home, like my mom was playing a very big role in terms of changing a type of food at home, helping to build a little bit something. Although he was taking money, but she had a little bit money left. And that's when my dad changed and see an importance of the role of the woman. And he was one of those daddy in Tanzania who was raising awareness, telling people about how important women are. When I was in school, my history teacher, he beat me. I have scars on my head, on my hands. I was sitting in the class of 120 children, one desk, five kids. I was smelling bad, irritations, fungus. So that eliminates my education, and it eliminates girls' education in Tanzania even now. So I stood up and said, okay, you have beaten me. You beat me to the maximum. But I'm telling you, it's time to make change. I'm starting this non-government organization, and I'm going to link with people around the world to make this change. And from there, I said, challenge is not something to kill you. Challenge is a gift. Whenever challenge comes to you, use it as a tool to break the wall. And now as I'm talking, I'm running this non-government organization with many women in my country and women here in America, including University of Students of Colorado, study abroad with Laura De Luca. And then I'm owning my own tour company, and it is all about women to women. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
Christina, I'm going to come down to you, and I'm going to ask you, because you didn't answer the question of what happened, and then what was the impact on you?
So I'm going to talk about something that happened in our sector that actually disillusioned me and discouraged a lot of people. I think people that come into the social justice work that we do, especially in serving others through humanitarian work and disaster relief, expect that we're there to protect those who are the most vulnerable, who have been impacted by disasters and conflicts. And in the last couple of months, it's come to light that several of the large international NGOs, and I won't mention which ones and not one that I work for, have not safeguarded the people they were there to protect. And the first big case that came out recently was women in Haiti that had underage women that had been used as prostitutes and solicited sexual favors in exchange for aid and other things. And that was just the first. And another one as recently as this week is in the news again. I think that pushed a lot of us to want to make change and reform within our sectors. It's not just the beneficiaries, but there's also been instances of staff members across the sector who have felt undervalued. And definitely a report came out recently that in the charitable sector, women are underpaid than their male counterparts. So we recently worked in D.C. with the community to get over 100 CEOs, mostly men, some female, and there's another change we need to make. But we got over 110 CEOs to sign on to a pledge that as international humanitarian aid workers that they will be more cognizant of this issue. If someone has a discretion at a site in the field where they might be delivering aid, they will not then be able to move to another charity, which is what had happened, but they will be on a blacklist. So we're really working within the community to try and protect those who are vulnerable, both on staff and those that we serve.
Thank you. Charlie, would you answer the same two questions? What happened and how has it affected you?
Hi. So Yeah, this is a hard question for me, and I think it's hard because not because I don't have any experiences, but maybe because I have so many, and I at this point in my life, they all sort of merge together, and I find myself struggling to separate the different experiences that not only I've had, but that my friends have had, that I've, you know, because we are an accumulation of our experiences and our friends and family's experiences, right? So I am really struggling right now more than I thought that I would. And so the struggle is, my God, I've been through a lot. I didn't realize that if I go back to even my childhood, it's like, wow, I've been fighting a long time. And then I think about the women in my life, my mother and my, you know, my aunts and the men, some of the men, but my grandmother. I think that I would have to say the most profound thing for me wasn't even so much the experiences that I've had, the Me Too experiences that I've had with men per se, and those have been obviously very damaging, but realizing that this is obviously generations deep, sitting down with my grandmother and having her tell me her experiences and the things that she went through and some of the things that my grandfather did that I didn't know. What? You know, I mean, and hearing from my aunt that that her husband threatened to do things to me when I was a baby, and it's like, wait a minute, wait. So the realization that this is obviously cultural, it's bigger than me. So it is Me Too, but it's Me Too and everyone. And that is a lot to put on not just ourselves, but on the next generation. And so when I'm sitting here and you're asking me this, I think I'm struggling because I chose at a young age to not have children. And I think that this was part of the reason why. When I myself look at humanity, I see, wow, it's a fascinating species, right? But I've never subscribed to the idea that we are as great as everyone says that we are. Because when I look at humanity, I think to myself, what the hell could you all have been, could we all have been, had we not silenced women, silenced the men who had voices, who wanted to say, there are ideas and experiences and things that we could have been that have been killed, that have been silenced in sexual harassment. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't know if I'm answering the question, but what I can say is that when I look at little girls right now, we have to, and it's not just little girls, it's little boys. We have to. How do you empower both of them and change? Because there is a bit of hypocrisy here. And that is that on one end we're saying, you know, we have to do something about Me Too, on the other hand, we have media, entertainment that we watch that worships in one regard, sort of worship the very things that we're fighting against. We watch movies where we have heroes who do things to women. Come here, baby, give me a kiss. And we're like, yeah, you know, we go. So there's a lot that we have to peel away, and I don't know where to begin with that. But I think this is a great start, so I don't know if that helps. But I'm struggling with this. Thank you, guys. I'm struggling.
It's okay, Maggie. So Maggie's had a death in the family, and she's reacting to that. I'll give her time out. Thank you, Charlie. Lisa, do you want to talk about what the reaction was for you?
I have many reactions right now. And one is, we talked about disrupting the system to have more conversations. And we had a group of students that wanted to disrupt this system a little today. They really came here and wanted to have conversations. And we had folks that are maybe my age and above, and I'm one of them. Hey, that's not the way the panel was set up. That's not, we were going to talk to you and you were going to hear us and ask some questions. And I think that while it's really important to hear some of these stories, you all have your own. And I said, this is kind of where I think these students are saying, we want to talk about it. We want to be able to bring this conversation to each other and know how to have those conversations. Because we can sit at a panel and share what we share, but until you start learning to have conversations with those around you that you're with and you work with and in your community and your schools, then all we are is a panel that you heard some information that was sad and tragic and terrible, and then you leave and we didn't disrupt the system. So I think part of what I struggle with is I think there are people here, and I understand, want to hear from the panelists and their experience, but there's also a part of this group, and hearing that the students wanted more conversation, how do we do both? How do we give that space?
Exactly. That's amazing. And I would add, thank you so much for that. I think she just said part, and I thank everyone for this feedback because this is helping. I want to hear from you guys, too. I think, I came to the conclusion that if I don't have an answer, like I said, that means that I came to learn from you and to hear from you. So I hope to hear from some of you in your experiences. So, yeah.
Let me just say very quickly that my contribution at this point to the whole Me Too, the women's movement, was I raised a strong daughter. And I raised a daughter who has moved through several careers, successful careers. But when she was working in a male-dominated field, I credit myself with giving her the courage to walk away when men were abusive to her. It's tough. It's tough. And I tell all young women, it is not easy to stand up. But you have to believe in yourself. You have to be strong. And you have to understand that you really are entitled to be successful. You're entitled to compete. And you don't have to take it. You don't.
Any other comments from the panel on that, what the effect was on you?
From the audience.
Well, yes, Lord.
Eva has a.
We do have added mics. If any, go ahead, Eva. I do want to hear from you. But we have hand mics. They do want to hear from you. They thought they would. I'm sorry, sir, that this process is not as much fun for you or others. Or others.
Don't apologize.
Right.
It's okay.
Now, you're going to make me ask, if I had been a man, would you have said that to me? But anyway, that's what women have to do. But I'm happy that you're all here. Is there anyone? Let's finish here, and then I would like to go to the audience because there is another question to pose to them and to pose to you that gets us into the forward movement of it all, into the positive. What can we do? Do either of you two, Eva or Celine, want to say anything? Or here's the next question that we all should be asking, and the question is, what can each of us do? I want to ask the panel first, and then I want to come out there, and I hope some of you are brave enough to take the microphone and tell us, here's one thing I do. Every day now, I do this one thing. Or I speak up in this situation. Or I write this. Or I tell others this. Because that's what will keep this alive toward our common goal of equity for all men and women. So let's move it to the panel first. Is there one thing that you're doing that you can do, that you have done, that can make a difference now going forward? Who wants to start with that?
Can you ask again?
I see you leaning forward, Lisa. Do you want to?
Well, I think the conversations, it's the bottom line. Wherever you are in the situations you're in, I'm in a leadership role. It's having conversations at all levels. It's tuning in. It's creating the space for those conversations. And it's amazing when you create the space and you create some trust that you're really there to create a certain environment, you're going to get a lot of information. It's going to be uncomfortable. And some of it may be a little bit to the edge, but I would say it's the conversations. It's being able to have some information you're sharing and then finding a path to healing, finding a path to changing those systems.
Eva.
I went to therapy. I mean, like, that's honestly, like, I think that... So what I was going to share, my, like, heart is racing, and I'm kind of shaking because I feel like talking about something that I've told two people in the world about. So maybe I should. So when I was 11, I got very sick, and I went to the doctor. And in the course of my evaluation, the doctor touched me and said, "Does that feel good?" And it did. And in that moment, my sexuality was awoken. And it was absolutely tied to shame and to something being wrong. And I didn't realize how that had impacted me for decades. And finally, a couple years ago, I was like, God, I keep doing this behavior. You know, I keep putting myself in situations where shame and secrets and something being wrong is the only way that I can achieve sexual enjoyment as an adult. And so I went to therapy, and I told one friend about this. I remember, like, standing on the top of Mount Tam, and I couldn't even, I had to put my hand over my eyes because I was like, I can't look at the world and tell this story. And I love having friends because I forget that this happened all the time. And I experienced 4 years of my life where I was going to doctors constantly. And my friend would always say, like, oh, I wonder if this is reminding you of that event. And I was like, fuck, man, why did I tell you? Because I keep forgetting, right? I have a built-in forgetter. But this is part of, like, being in this world, right, is I get to share this thing. And so when I say, like, go to therapy, like, it's like, I'm not being flip. Like, I had to deal with this thing, and I still deal with this thing on a daily basis. And, like, I'm married now, and I still have symptoms of this event that impact my marriage. But, like, I every day do everything that I can so that, like, my internal person system is as okay as it can possibly be so that I can go out into the world and, like, speak with strength to men who are treating me inappropriately, or speak with strength to women that I want to inspire. And, like, I want to say also, I think that the power of the Me Too movement is in how these tiny little chains start to be formed. So I felt okay saying this to you because I read Juno Diaz's story in The New Yorker recently. If you haven't read it, read it. And he talks about finally speaking up about something. And I thought, okay, if Juno Diaz did it, I can do it. And if I can do it, then maybe 5 or 10 or 15 of you can begin to talk about your experiences with a trusted friend on a mountain, covering your eyes, or with a therapist. But, like, I think that there's so, like, what I've learned is there's so much compassion that's available, and it's so hard to be the first person to stand up and be like, I'm scared and I need help. So, like, I'm doing that right now, right? I'm scared right now and I need help, but, like, we're all here, and I'm so grateful that you're all here and that you're willing to kind of roll with the multiple ways in which this panel is unfolding. And I think that, like, we're not being panelists who are, like, performing a perfect panel. We're being humans having a human experience, and we happen to have microphones. That's it.
Sure. Thank you, Eva. Yes, Maggie. I'm going to ask you all to keep your comments as short as possible because we want to hear from all of you, and then we do want to open it up to questions. Okay, Maggie.
We have a lot of issues. Time is not enough, and it will never be enough because we have lots of issues. But at least I have founded a non-government local organization, and it empowers women and girls in my country in our small level. But I think I can see a big audience. I see lots of people here. And I know America is so big and you have a lot of access. When I went for dinner last night, I was telling one of the student, volunteer, I wish, if you remember, I was sitting down. For those who were in there, I was not sitting on the chair. We normally sit down a lot anyway. But I told her, I wish if I'll have an extra stomach and that I can serve all this food in there. And when I go back home, I open it and share with my community. And I was telling her, I'm enjoying. It tastes very good. It's very healthy. But I'm just imagining what other people are eating right now. But I know you cannot help the world at once. But at least I have started this again. A registered non-government organization. At least I have started my own safari company. And you guys, you have all this potential. You can empower us, not only necessarily by giving money. You have everything. You can connect me with different people. Take my cards. Take the connection. Even now today, think about it and do something. I have some people like Nicole. Can you stand up? She's a student from Colorado University. I normally take study abroad to Tanzania, University of Colorado, and many other people and families also from one individual. Connect, and then you get to know more about the challenges and beautiful also about our country, because there's also beautiful about it. So I have a bad experience about many people who comes to our country. They ask us, they want to listen. They're very good listener. They have good listening skills. But the action, zero, almost. So all of you who are here are touched. That's why you are here. You know about women issues. Don't walk away from the door and go to your family, enjoy with your family. And then you are like, wow. Remember, you are born for a reason. Remember, a challenge is a tool to break the wall. But we cannot do it ourselves. We need people like you who have all these opportunities. You are very, very lucky to be here. I'm telling you. Travel. If you can't travel, ask people like Robin, Love, and other people who are inside here who have been going to Africa. They'll tell you something. You'll think you are doing a little bit of thing, but it's a big thing to us.
Thank you. Thank you.
The word challenge has been said a couple times, and I wanted to answer one of your questions, which was what was the impact that this experience has had in your life? And just like you said, there are so many experiences, and I'm standing here, I don't even know which one I can talk about, but I'll talk about what I kind of opened with, the fact that I live in a very male-dominated work. And I have to say, it's made me so strong, the fact that I had to fight every single time that I showed up to a jam session, the fact that I have to fight and show that I was a real musician and not just a girl and a singer. Because that's, you know, when you come up in a jazz jam session and you're a girl, first of all, it's assumed that you're a singer, and then when you are a singer, you know, she's probably gonna sing a ballad or whatever. And so it made me really do my homework so that I would have my place there. And the fact that it wasn't just all given to me on a silver platter and that I had to fight for it made a very strong musician out of me. And so now with a strong voice, and I can use that voice to help with the movement, write songs about it. And just, for example, I said it's a male-dominated world, but it's not because there's not a lot of jazz female musicians. It's because they are not put on the scene. There are many, many, many female jazz musicians, and I just hired I have a new band now, and the piano player is a woman, and it changes so much in the music. The level of testosterone is down, and there's this beautiful, magical thing that happens on stage, and so I think it's good. Challenge is good, and it makes us stronger, and we have to keep taking it in a positive way.
Thank you.
And I would just very quickly say, we are here where we are, but we have sons and daughters. And there's an old Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young song about teach your children. Teach your sons and daughters. Teach your sons to respect the girls that they play with as children. Teach them when they go on dates how they should treat the women they take out. And women, when the men that you date, students, when the guys that you hang out with behave inappropriately, say they're behaving inappropriately. Don't hold back. You've got the power. And we as parents have the power and the responsibility to teach our children well.
Anyone else want to make a comment before I entertain any questions or comments.
I just wanted to keep on the theme of supporting one another, because regardless of our race, our ethnicity, our religion, we hurt in the same way, we have pain, we bleed the same color red. And especially, you know, I was actually brought to this conference to talk more on refugee issues, so most of my panels have been about that and kind of giving some of the stories of the things I've seen and some of the horrors, both overseas, that women and children, boys and girls, have faced, and their traumas. And those that are lucky enough to get resettled and to come here, reach out to them, because they have experienced things you can't believe, a lot of rape, a lot of domestic violence, and a lot of the things we've just been talking about in the systems that have brought them here. So I just want to, kind of reiterate what started on the other end of the table. Reach out and be a support, because they're new, they're vulnerable, they don't have communities, and a lot of populations, they just need to know that we care. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Did I see you, Lisa, leaning toward the mic?
No, I'm good. I think I'm good.
What can everyone do? Does anyone want to make a comment or have a question? We have microphones. We do have cards if you don't want to. The students, I would love to hear from the students. Many of them, I noticed, just had to go to classes. Are there any students who want to ask any questions? Back there, I see a hand. And we've got a mic here, too, or a card.
So I guess given that we do have, like,
could you stand up, please?
Oh, yep, I can.
Thank you.
That was scary. When, like, talking to, like, the male half of the population, like, what are good interactions to have between, like, males and females and, like, just between each other? Like, what are the conversations to have and, like, how should those be, constructed in order to improve sort of relations between men and women and the respect between them?
How to have the conversations between men and women.
So,
Lisa, you want to talk about the corporate world?
I'd like to talk about my kids. Okay, so a son and two girls. And I think the bottom line is kind of starting with the basic fundamental is every human being deserves respect. And while we understand with the whole dating scene that gets complicated, what does that look like? What does that mean? But it has to start with there's a human being there. And to have interactions to get to know somebody. And to start to get a feeling when something doesn't feel comfortable, and you have to tune into it. I think too often we let a lot of things go by that we don't recognize are really degrading us. That happens in the workplace as well. You kind of go along to get along. Somebody makes a joke, but you walk away and say, how did that feel? That's where we talk about getting a support system. Because that conversation, the more someone either doesn't recognize they said something offensive or they didn't care, it gets down to a pattern that can turn into abuse. So you have to really tune in, or do they care about how I feel? That goes both for the male and the female. And really starting those conversations and tuning into what's happening here. This is where education can take place. Men are nervous. There's men out there that are nervous now in the workplace and in the schools and you name it. And I think it's because they're not sure. And if the more you have those conversations, the more you're both going to learn from that. So there's a lot of information out there, and hopefully you've got a support system with parents and others and teachers and you name it, and counselors. If you've had situations, counseling is a great thing. So that's where I think it has to start, with you really tuning in to how does this make me feel and stop ignoring it. I think you heard a few things on the panel where we've ignored and moved on, and those things have had an impact, and we've taken more than we should take. So I think really that's what we've taught our children is every human being deserves respect. What does that look like? How do you want to be treated? Do you want people to think about what you think and feel, or they just want to have some activities with you after a few beers, right? So I think those are the things that you have to build those conversations in. So those are my suggestions of really tuning in, and don't be afraid to have the conversation. Start asking the questions, because the sooner that happens, the sooner you're able to start changing and disrupting that pattern that's been going on. So those are my thoughts.
Okay, I've got some questions now that have come through, and I want to ask you them. But here's one that I must ask. Why do you gals stick to the expression, you guys? If a difference is in the language, isn't that something that We are all referred to. Four women sit down to dinner, and the waiter says, "What would you guys like?" And we just accept that. That's maybe a comment somebody made that's kind of good. Here's a question that's interesting. Where do you think the Me Too movement will go from here? What's going to look like in 1 year, 5 years from now?
Who's the future? What's it going to look like in November?
Yes. Anybody else? Did I see someone here who wanted to speak with a question? There we go. Microphone up here, please. Quickly, while you're getting there.
Oh, I wanted to add answer to that. I mean, I think it's going to look really messy and yes. really fucked up for a while. Yes. And I think that we need to have... I don't know what we need to have. I need to have a very high tolerance for like, okay, this is maybe not ideal. We're not doing it perfectly, but let's try this way. I expect a lot of people are going to get fired. I'm personally excited about some people getting fired. I'm excited about people resigning. But I think, you know, the image that I have is like we are the liquefied caterpillar in the chrysalis right now. It is gnarly. But let's like embrace that it's gnarly and talk about it and be really open about the process instead of expecting that now we're like, I completely understand the rules. Like we don't, but we're all working together. So yeah, it's going to be disgusting. Get excited.
Yes. Microphone?
Do I push a button? Okay. So
loud and clear, please.
Loud and clear. I've stood up three times in my life. Once in my late 20s on the trading floor at Goldman Sachs.
Yes.
I filed an employment complaint
because I
was being harassed. Okay. So I filed this complaint. They didn't want to see it go to court, and so they settled out. I can't talk about it. The second one, I left an abusive marriage that I can talk about for hours over cocktails. Nobody wants to hear it, I'm sure. The third one was similar to what I experienced in my 20s. It was actually only several years ago, same sort of thing, where I was told, either you're in a relationship with me or you're not working here. I can't talk about it because I signed a non-disclosure. And this keeps happening. I mean, this is, and I just wanted to address this because Eva, you said, use the attorneys, the laws exist, and they do. And you take care of yourself and you say, okay, single working mom, got to take care of myself financially. I'm going to sign this thing because I've got to put groceries on the table. But it didn't help me help this movement because boy, would have it been an awesome front page story.
Yep. More power to you.
Yes, go ahead. Do you want to comment? We'd like to hear from you.
Okay, my name is Kaylee Gill. I'm from Peru State College. I'm a junior, and Peru State College is in Nebraska. First, I want to comment on the awkward thing that happened earlier. I also agreed with him. Like, he's not the only one that wanted to hear you guys speak. And I heard a lot of people in this row who are women also said no, they just didn't stand up and say anything. He actually did. And I just want to say that real quick.
Wow. That's great. Thank you.
I think we need to stop being so defensive and like attacking just because they're a man. I just wanted to say that. I know I might get some hate for that, but we just need to always keep that in mind. That. And then also, I want to say Eva. I feel like I connect with you on a spiritual level just because the way you present yourself and how you cuss, like you're breaking that stereotype where women can't cuss, but you do, and it's okay. And just because you cuss doesn't mean you're not ladylike. So I like how you carry yourself like that.
Fuck yeah.
And also I cuss like a sailor. So like, I love that about you. But, I came to this panel because a lot of my friends have been sexually harassed and a couple of them have been raped. So I just wanted to come here and learn about other people's experiences and stuff. And what else was I going to talk about? I've had some experiences where like I comment on political things with men and stuff, like on Facebook and stuff. And then they take that as an invitation of, I want to get with them. Or, like, for an example, a guy started commenting on my Instagram pictures after I talked to him about political things. And mind you, I have a fiance, and this person knows that. And they were just commenting about, oh, wow, you look so good in that picture, and wow, you've been gaining weight, and you look so good. And I was just like, just because I'm talking to you about political things or just things in general doesn't give you an invitation to come in and talk about my body and things. I am being serious, like, take me serious, please. So that's okay. Another reason why I'm here.
Thank you.
And then one more thing.
I
just want it.
Time is up. I have one more question, and we're at the...
I just wanted to speak to sharing what we're doing. You asked, what are we doing? I'm Tina Lehman, and I am a year healthy from breast cancer. I'm a two-time cancer survivor. So I am done playing small. I am returning from the UN Commission of the Status of Women. About a year ago, I started Blue Sky Thinking. My baby's in the incubator. It's focused on quality education, empowering girls and women, and lifting the voices of women. To speak to the power of the voice, Ava, we're now sister friends, spiritual friends right now. I have started writing a book. So Pumsile Lagonuka, she's the UN Women Executive Director at the conference, she said the most powerful thing we can do as women is encourage each other.
Yes,
so not saying, oh, she's fat, or oh, she looks a certain way. Loving each other for who we are. Because a lot of us have been through what I am writing about. And I want to thank my friend Gloria for encouraging me to go to the Santa Fe Women's Workshop, where I wrote a fat flash fiction piece called Overpowering the Boogeyman. It was my story. My granny was a single mother. The man who I now call the boogeyman married her and started sexually abusing me at the age of 5. So I now have started my own blog. This flash fiction piece is becoming a book to educate parents, to educate teachers, to help survivors in how they find their voice. That's the main thing I took from the UN conference, is we have to raise our voices and take the fear and shame away from the predator and open it up as a dialogue and bring light to a very dark situation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank this wonderful panel.